It's Wednesday, April 22nd, 2009, and you're listening to episode 144 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 50 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name is Pat.
And my name is Chris.
As of this week, we are kicking off the charity.
Yes.
Dan's not quite long enough. All right, for those
he
of
isn't,
you
it's sad.
That didn't catch that show or don't know what we're talking about.
I think everybody knows what we're talking about.
We are going
if
to
you
do,
know what I mean.
We are going to do a charity.
And I think you do.
And here's how it's going to work.
I don't. Draw me a picture.
Fear the Boot is going to support March of Dimes. Specifically, there is a listener of this show who unfortunately and tragically lost an infant baby, and they have set up a charity in her name. The baby's name was Raina, and they have set up a charity in her name, which is Raina's Wings. And what we're going to do is this. On this show, obviously, we make a lot of jokes about my hair. Chad has really long hair. So what we are going to do...
14 inches, baby.
We are going to give you guys a couple shows. I'm thinking maybe... two shows. All right. Chad says two shows. So we're going to give you guys two shows to raise $1,000. All right. And I'm going to start this off with a pledge of my own, like $50 or $100. I got to figure that out.
$10,000.
Yeah. Man. If you guys can raise $1,000 for the March of Dimes, then I will put a specific link on the show notes. You need to go to this link to make the donation so we can track the money going in.
Yeah, because we're not going to take the money. It's going
right.
to be you directly
yeah.
donating to March of Dimes.
You're just a direct donation. You're not sending this to us. And if we see that charity by the time we get two shows from now go up by $1,000, then I'm going to cut my hair short. Chad is going to shave his head completely bald.
That's right.
And per the joke, Dan's not quite long enough. My hair, unfortunately, despite its length, is not quite long
despite
enough.
Despite its glorious flowing locks.
Oh, yeah.
Just, is it, what were the exact lengths again, Dan? Do you remember?
Locks of Love will not take the hair unless it's at least 10 inches long. Chad, we measured yours at 14 inches. Mm-hmm. My hair is actually only about 6 inches long. And so it's not long enough to donate to Locks of Love. But it's really thick hair, though.
How's Carla with all this? Is she okay? I mean, obviously it's for charity, but is she cool with all this?
It's the thickness.
It's my hair's
That's
got a lot of girth, and so we're still going to go with this.
It's how it flows, baby.
All right, but anyway, the point being here,
it's got good motion.
All our moronic juvenile jokes aside,
we really are
raising $1,000 here to save babies.
That's right.
Prenatally, this is not a joke.
The hair is going to Locks of Love to help kids who have cancer or some other disease or whatever that makes them lose their hair. They make the hair into wigs,
right?
So that they have that confidence and stuff. And you know, at first when I was younger, I thought about Locks of Love. I'm like, oh, you know, those kids need to toughen up because I was young and a jerk. But those kids need to toughen up. What does hair matter? They got a bigger fight ahead of them. They have got to fight this cancer. But no, morale helps you get through this. Your own self-worth helps you get through this and feeling good about yourself. And when they can look in the mirror and not see that what is happening,
their bald head,
it makes them more accepted in society. And there's a part of me that says, oh, screw society. But that's just me.
Right.
I'm going bald and I can take it. But, you know, we're talking about kids here.
So, yeah.
We're talking about kids who are fighting against diseases that are killing them.
And that's just the hair. Yeah. I mean, the $1,000 is going to something.
It's going to the March of Dimes to help kids who are dying.
Right.
You know, and I got to say, kudos to the March of Dimes, really, as an organization, basically because they've been able to keep their costs under control for as long as they've been in existence. I mean, by now, really, they should be the March of Half Dollars.
Yeah.
But they've been able to stay the March of Dimes. Good job for them.
Good job for them. They defeated polio. I mean, come on. They destroyed polio in our lifetimes.
I want to mention something else real quick. I've been kind of out of the loop for the past week or two because I've been dealing with some of my own crap that has nothing to do with the show. But I didn't catch this, but I'm being told that there are some people on our forums that are developing Fear the Boot, but it's Fear the Boot listeners. It's not Fear the Boot specific, I don't think. But they're developing some kind of a Neverwinter Nights mod. I don't know any details
on
this.
They're not developing some kind of Neverwinter Nights mod.
Okay.
They're creating the Neverwinter Nights mod.
Okay.
They're creating the Fear the Boot inspired Neverwinter Nights mod. I have never played this game. My entire experiences with this game are Phil's playing it. I walk into his apartment at the time he's living in an apartment, and he's playing the game and he's punching a rat. He's a guy punching. I'm like, this game is really stupid and I've never played. I was wrong. I'm totally wrong. It is a D&D game.
Right.
That is a role-playing game that is completely moddable. It came out several years ago, and it's all about how people can mod it and create their own modules and create their own adventures and stuff, and it's all about the tool sets that do this. So anyway, on the forums, there were two guys, Michael and Mindtaker. Actually, both their names happen to be Michael. One of the Michaels was like, I like Neverwinter Nights, but geez, all I can do is just create cities and landscapes and stuff and basically the environment, but I suck at scripting. And then the other one was like, oh, man, I hear you. I totally blow at making all the environments and landscapes, but I rock out at creating scripting. Yeah, it's really a bummer. And I'm like,
it's like the two-headed monster on Sesame Street.
It's like chocolate and peanut butter getting together.
Yeah.
Or Chris and Another Man.
Exactly.
So these guys are making the mod.
And I'm like, listen, guys,
right.
You really need to make this love connection here. This is... Come on, it's obvious. And they're like, holy crap, you're right. And then they really got into it. And so I set them up a space on the forums that's hidden, you know, because we don't want to do spoilers and stuff. And they are taking volunteers on our forums. That's feartheboot.com/forum.
Well, I tell you what, here's what I'll do. I will link that. Yeah, like I said, I've been out of the loop on the forum for the past week or two. But what I will do is I will get the link to that thread. I will also get the...
Let me tell you this. They're taking volunteers right now.
Right.
It looks like a lot of fun. It looks really cool. And from what I've seen of it and them talking and planning, it's going to be pretty funny. It's going to be a pretty cool thing. I am totally going to buy Neverwinter Nights. I'm totally going to play this mod. I cannot wait. Check out the forums. Dan's going to provide the links and see what they need. Basically, you apply to them and say, hey, this is what I can do. And there you go. They're taking like voice actors and modders and I don't know, because I'm not a modder. I'm just trying to help them get this project through because it sounds like so much fun.
And it's the same thing for the Reina's Wings. Check the show notes. We'll provide you with all that good stuff. So, Chad, I want to talk about something here, which is a comment that you are ascribing to Isaac Asimov himself.
That's right. The man.
Isaac Asimov himself made this comment, which is that it is impossible to ever make a true science fiction movie. Impossible, at least very unlikely.
Yes.
I want you to explain what he said, why he said it, and then I want to kick it around and see if we agree.
Okay. I'm not going to quote the man exactly because, you know, I just...
Because you're drunk.
Because I'm half drunk and I'd end up slaughtering the quote. But what he says is very true. I watched Will Smith's I, Robot. Okay movie. I'd give it probably a B. The ending was a little hokey. But anyway, I looked up on the Wikipedia site on iRobot, just because I always do that. Now, a movie that I enjoy, I look up the Wikipedia and the IMDb to see if there's things I missed and whatnot. And it was interesting because they had a quote in the Wikipedia article on iRobot the movie from Asimov himself. Asimov was saying, you can never create a true science fiction movie. Because when you make a movie, you have to sell it to millions of people.
As opposed to a book, you're selling to thousands of people.
Hundreds of thousands. Best definitely not millions.
Well,
but
saying in the age of the internet, you can sell to two.
The point he's making is that science fiction is not about the horror and the violence. Sure, you can have science fiction with that, but it's about the science. And it's stupidly as this sounds, it's about the fiction. You know, it's about the ideas that you're dealing with. It's about the concepts. It's about alien races and cultures. And it's about sometimes the philosophical concepts, and it's about the technologies and the ethics and morality in the movies, you can't do that, because what he is saying is that the average moviegoer, because you're selling to millions with movies but thousands with science fiction, chances are your average moviegoer is not familiar enough with science fiction. They're not a science fiction fan. They don't read lots of things. Sure, maybe they watch Star Trek.
To explain that a little bit, when we talk about science fiction here, we're not exactly talking about Star Trek and Star Wars.
Yeah.
if we talk about...
And I don't consider Star Wars sci-fi fancy.
Probably.
But that's splitting hairs.
Splitting hairs is a different point. But if we talk about what on The Simpsons they referred to as the ABCs of science fiction, Asimov, Bradbury, and Clark, you know, the really original science fiction writers, okay, yes, I know Jules Verne, but you get my point.
And I find Arthur C. Clarke incredibly dry and boring.
Well, but here, that's my point.
Yeah.
That typically their books look something like this. They get a very, very fascinating concept.
Exactly.
A what if. That's why one of the names this genre fiction have is speculative fiction.
Right.
What if XYZ were to be true? The second thing they do is they get deeply into the science.
Mm-hmm.
You pick up a lot of Arthur C. Clarke stuff. They talk a lot about
Asimov and Clark both wrote science textbooks.
Yes.
Clark himself made the thesis for the concept of telecommunication satellites back in like the 50s.
Yeah.
And they use his formulas today.
And when you pick up their fiction, you're not reading stories about warships trading fire and alien races, you know, and things like that.
That might be in there.
That might be in there. But the story itself is fundamentally a combination of a speculative what if followed by a whole lot of science. And quite frankly, in my opinion, I think many of them are brilliant in terms of the stories they construct, but actually in their execution are very poor writers.
Really? Wow.
And
you're taking a pretty stretch there, so people are going to challenge you on that concept.
Maybe so, but here's the thing: although
I agree with you with Clark, I think Clark is incredibly boring.
Clark in particular, if I read books like 3001 or Childhood's End, or what I see, very cardboard characters,
Rendezvous with Rama,
yeah,
very very boring.
Fantastic
cool
ideas.
Concept. God, I love the concept of Rendezvous with Rama. Oh my God, those characters are awful. They are cardboard cutouts.
Right. What the statement is saying, yes, as far as I'm understanding the way you're explaining it.
Which I'm probably explaining it horribly. But
well, we can link it off. I'll see if I can find it and link that as well off the show notes. Is that...
Heady show notes this episode.
That kind of thing won't sell to an audience.
Right. It's not that they're dumb and they don't understand it. That's not what he's saying. He's saying that they're not into it. If they were into it, it would be science fiction sells to millions. No, it sells to thousands or hundreds of thousands. They're not into it. They're not interested in it. But what are movie-going audiences into that science fiction can deliver them? Imagine science fiction's like this medium that is packaging something that the audience wants and delivering it to them. What it's delivering to audiences are one of two things, sometimes both. Horror or action.
Action, yeah.
Yeah.
That if you put in a lot of guns, or if you make it really scary,
right?
Now
or both, yeah.
Now suddenly futuristic concepts sell. But
yes,
if you make a dry, hard science, speculative story, okay, you might get the occasional movie that works.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, and I know somebody's going to pitch us one or two, what about this, what about that? Yeah, I know. It sometimes works.
Those are the exceptions that prove the rule.
But yeah, exactly. I think he's absolutely right.
Even high concept independent pieces. Well, I was about to quote Logan's Run. Logan's Run's not independent, but like THX-1138 and some of the others, stuff I can't even remember. Even Fahrenheit 451, the movie, has action. Even the book has action in it. Logan's Run has action in it, even though it's kind of a high concept piece. And Rollerball. Rollerball is a high concept piece that is all up. About the, and I'm talking about the old one, not that stupid new one, that's all about the action and stuff. It's very difficult to find a sci-fi movie that is not trying to scare the pants off of you or isn't trying to run and gun and have a lot of violence. Chris, you're old. Can you think of a sci-fi movie that doesn't have action or horror in it?
And that has mass appeal? I really honestly have been trying to think of a movie that doesn't fall into space opera-esque drama or type of theme. I really can't think of any that are high concept and have that mass appeal. Nothing's coming.
I'm sure there's one or two out there that I either can't think of or just haven't seen yet that are sci-fi like that, don't have the sort of, you know,
what
action.
What about like Gattaca?
I was just about to use that as an example, actually. Gattaca is one of the few ones, and I absolutely love the movie Gattaca.
And that one awesome. Didn't have a lot of action.
No,
well, it's a drama dystopian. I wouldn't say it was a horror movie by any stretch of the imagination.
Think about this. How sci-fi is that? Remember the series Max Headroom? I absolutely love that series. And people are like, oh, it's got Max Headroom in it. It's crazy. I remember those Coke commercials. The TV series was actually, and this is why it wasn't successful, was actually a high concept TV series. That's a sci-fi that doesn't have much action. Mm-hmm. And it's high concept. It's almost an art piece. And I like what Max Headroom, the tagline before each episode, it says it's 20 minutes in the future because it's all about media now. And stuff.
Right.
To me, Gattaca, you can apply that. Gattaca's 20 minutes into the future. It's not that sci-fi that's like very far away, that's really high concept of the spaceships and all that sort of stuff. Gattaca is something that can almost, there's just a small little technological leap that separates us from Gattaca.
I would say early on, in a certain sense, Lost, the series, may have almost fit that bill. I mean, its numbers have waned, and you can make the argument about declining audiences with TV and whatnot, but not necessarily a lot of action, plenty of drama, and there certainly is some action, but not like, you know, Michael Bay-esque levels of action.
Right.
And it is science fiction.
Yeah.
And it's a concept that hasn't fully been explained yet. You can say it's time travel, but there's obviously some other elements going on there as well. So, possibly.
As we've talked about this, a movie that came to mind that I think beautifully illustrates this is the upcoming Star Trek 11.
Yeah.
Because
it sanitizes all of those high Star Trek concepts and replaces them with car chases in space.
Amongst my friends, I've been referring to it as Stardate 90210 because you have this crew.
I can't wait to watch it. I'm so excited.
This crew of kids where the oldest guy on there looks 16. It's far in the future, but for no particular reason, Kirk has a drop top muscle car,
which he has no problem rolling off a cliff. Which
and,
why he does.
And everybody on there is angsty and oversexed and overly dramatic.
Including Spock?
Yes. Even Spock is overly dramatic.
Let me tell you why I am excited about Star Trek, though.
All right, I'll give you that one moment, then I'll finish
just
my
the
point.
One moment is that.
It's like me politely pausing so you can fart.
That's right. I cannot wait for this Star Trek movie. I am so looking forward to it. Oh, no, it's not Star Trek. It doesn't have those great Gene Roddenberry concepts of love and universal truth. No, it has car chases in space. That is the genre of movie we're talking about here. I want to see them build a space ramp. I want to see them paint a Confederate flag on the Enterprise. I want to see them jump the Starship Enterprise over the ramp, whistling Dixie the entire time.
And Waylon Jennings narrating in the background?
Totally. I am a huge, gigantic fan of Simon Pegg. I really like Zachary Quino. These are the guys who are playing Scotty and Spock, respectively. And I am going to see those two actors jump cars off of space ramps. And if I don't get that level of visceral excitement out of the movie, I will demand my money back. Right. I don't want any of that crap about equality and diplomacy and this is what Star Trek's about. I want them to say the tech terms and the BS sci-fi crap and all this. I want them to skydive off of a spaceship and fight while they're going through the atmosphere with swords.
Settle down. I can't wait. I paused for you to fart. I didn't wait for you to leave the room and take a dump.
Oh my God, this movie looks good. And totally not Star Trek.
Chance lost his damn mind. Now,
I just want to go see Uhura. That's all.
Here's my point. Exactly what Chad described in that somewhat cogent rant is the fact that they have radically changed what Star Trek is.
I completely agree.
It used to be about social themes. It used to be about exploration. It used to be about mystery. It used to be about science. And they have stripped a lot of that away.
Or so it seems.
Yes.
We haven't actually seen it yet.
From the previews, it seems they have stripped a lot of that away.
Because this is the movie they're selling to us.
Right, which may not be the movie we get, like Matrix 2. Thanks, jerks. But
you know, I liked Matrix 2.
I know.
Matrix Reloaded was good, and I even like Matrix Revolution.
Well, Matrix Revolution.
I'm not giving you guys.
You have a brain tumor, Chris. That's why you like Matrix
3. I'm not giving you guys time to make another skit.
Skit.
No, skid. That's skid. Oh, skid.
Skid. Skid marked.
But here's the thing.
I should go on a rant on why Matrix 2 is good.
I'm going to give you a chance for a different rant here in a second.
Oh, boy.
But what they are doing is they are taking all of the ideas that made Star Trek fairly hard science fiction and removing them and replacing them with something that, at least by their estimation, will give it mass appeal. And the same way Asimov talked about, you have to peel back these layers of science and speculation, replacing them with horror and guns.
You know what Asimov called that? Asimov called that I-E-Y-E, I-Sci-Fi. He called the movies like that visceral excitement, right, that all that sort of stuff, that car chases in space, that's I-Sci-Fi, and that's what sells. Whereas in books and stuff, you can have action and all that, but it's science fiction. Science fiction, not this sort of I-Sci-Fi. Let me ask you guys this. Now, we've given an example of maybe one or two, like Gattaca and all that sort of stuff. Do you think that you can make a good sci-fi movie that is not I-Sci-Fi, but is science fiction, no violence in it whatsoever, and it isn't like a drama like you'd watch today, only it's just in a sci-fi setting, but who cares, because it's just like a drama, it's timeless. It is actually a science fiction movie. Do you think a science fiction movie could be made and be successful to general audiences?
No.
No.
I don't
think so.
I would say yes.
I would have to agree with Chris. I think it's a matter of imagination and effort.
I think you could use science fiction successfully as a setting or a backdrop. I think you could make a hard science series.
You could do Sex in the City 3025.
Which they did. And it was Cleopatra 2525 or whatever. Yeah. But you can do something like that with science fiction as a backdrop, right, as long as you have the action, horror, drama, love story, something else that's really carrying it. Could you take something like, and I'm not talking about what Stanley Kubrick did, but could you take like the actual 2001 and turn that into a movie verbatim, and would it work? Or Childhood's End or something like that?
The problem with 2001, and it isn't really a problem that I see because I do enjoy that movie, even the long, crazy bits. 2001, it's a murder mystery in a sci-fi setting.
Right.
I almost feel compelled to ask, is there such a thing as just a sci-fi genre? Is everything just a murder mystery in a sci-fi setting, a love story in a sci-fi setting?
Are we making
setting
a false dichotomy?
Yeah, exactly. Is it an action, a war, a historical fiction in a sci-fi setting? Is it a romance in a sci-fi
setting?
Before
we get into that, whether science fiction is a setting versus an actual story, Chris, I'd be interested to hear you defend the yes.
For me, it all comes down to, as long as you have strong, likable characters wrapped around a good story, then you have a success regardless of the genre. And this transcends sci-fi. And the example I'd point to is the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Julie has no interest in fantasy movies whatsoever. None. But I kept dogging her, you've got to watch these movies. So finally I negotiated with her, said, just give me 45 minutes. If you don't like it at that point, we can stop. Put Fellowship on for 45 minutes. Again, she doesn't like fantasy movies. And in that first 45 minutes, there's no real action going on in that movie. There's no real action. It's just all character interactions and well-acted portrayals of these characters. You get a sense and you have reasons to like these characters. And after that 45 minutes was done, she wanted to continue watching because she was invested into the story that was being told, which, you know, yeah, okay, it happened to be set in a fantasy setting, but anybody can have that kind of journey, you know, that Frodo has in any kind of movie, but she was interested in the characters that were there.
I think you're making Dan's point here from a second ago to expand on about the fact of, is it truly, is science fiction its own genre, or is it just like what Chad said, is science fiction something that you apply to other types of stories like romances or mysteries or an adventure of some sort? And furthermore, I'm going to take you to the task by saying your example, I like your example. It's wrong in the fact that you're talking about fantasy, not science fiction. And we're talking about science fiction here. And I will say that Lord of the Rings being fantasy is not science fiction.
Dude, Pat totally just called you out.
And Pat, you're absolutely right. It is not science fiction. But I'm using that to illustrate my example. I know. The problem with that genre then is no one really has created a successful science fiction movie like that, in the sense where you can just have strong characters in a decent story. And I think that is because of the genre that it is, because everybody expects car chases in space because it looks so good. When you do it, why bother with the story?
My take on it is this. With science fiction being what it is, it's basically like sort of what Dan said earlier. It's science fiction. It is basically a story that is grounded in science. There's a lot of science to it. And by that, I mean intellectualism.
Maybe it's even about the science.
Exactly. It's about the science, where there's some heady topics in there that are like you got to think about. I have noticed a real bias against intellectualism and intelligence in the last decade or so. Maybe just in through my life. Obviously, I was a geek growing up or whatever. Yeah. So I was sort of the smart kid, whatever else like that. I think that what you get is a lot is in society in general, they don't like the really smart people. They sort of look at them like they're elitist and they're this, that, and the other.
The intelligentsia.
Exactly. Because like they're smarter than I am. And it's like it becomes a negative thing. I won't get on a real soapbox
about
it. But I have
as a child.
Well, no, I wasn't. But I mean, I will say that you've got that. And I think the point that I'm making, though, is that carries through the science fiction. You try to tell a good science fiction story that's you've got to sit there and think about it. That's not what people want. They're not interested in it.
They want lightsabers.
They want something that's simple, that's easy, that's pulp, that's easy to understand, and it's enjoyable. It's almost like they can go in, sit down, turn off, and enjoy. They don't have to think about it.
Pat, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, honestly, I couldn't agree with you more. And the BBC show Extras illustrates that point that you just made very, very well, in the sense that you have this guy, you know, he's a struggling actor trying to do something that would be considered art, you know, and have a level of culture to it. But the only way he ends up finding any success whatsoever is in this lowbrow TGIF ABC style comedy that just has no real value or substance whatsoever. And he hates it, but he finds all kinds of success in it. But it's not really what he wants.
Let me respond in a couple ways here. I was about to cut myself off on some of these tangents, but I've actually been getting people telling me that I should stop doing that and actually flesh some of these out rather than saying we're going to wait for a later show and then never doing it.
But Dan, it's not their show. Right. It's our show. And
don't let the tail wag the dog, Dan.
I wouldn't entirely agree with that. But the point being,
I don't agree with it either, actually.
But Chris, let me make one quick point. And
I disagree with myself vehemently.
And then I want to respond to Chad's broader point or the question we were struggling with here a second ago.
Chris, oh my God, I had a point.
I think Lord of the Rings, the movie, actually proves our point. And here's why. Tolkien did an unusual thing. If you look at it this way, every story falls generally into one of three categories. And I think they're all going to share some aspects of all categories, but you can clump them more in one than another. The first is a plot-driven story. Okay, this would be something like Star Trek II Wrath of Khan. It's about what's happening. It's not about the people. It's not about the place. It's about the things that are happening. There might be good characters. There might be good setting to it, but that's not what it's about. The second would be a character-driven story. Interview with a Vampire. Mm-hmm. Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird. Mm-hmm. The story's not about the events, it's about the people. Now, there are events, there are setting, but that's not what it's about. The third is a setting-driven story.
And this is what I think that the Lord of the Rings
this is exactly
is.
What Lord of the Rings is Lord of the Rings, quite frankly, if you really boil it down, very little occurs if you compare it to
it
the number of the pages.
It does not have much of a story to it.
It's about where they are and the history of where they are.
That's my point.
Right. In order to make a successful movie, they had to change that. Yeah. They had to make it a plot and character-driven story, ditching the entirety, or most of, Tolkien's original setting-driven story. They had to do exactly what Asimov is talking about. They had to change its fundamental nature to give it appeal to an audience.
And they did it skillfully because they
it's a great movie.
Actually change what was going on. I mean, you can still follow what's going on in the book.
But
I mean,
did they? I mean, they were faithful, generally speaking, to the plot and to the characters, but the setting was never strongly developed, yet that's what almost every page of the book is about, is the setting.
Tolkien is not telling a story per se.
He's telling a place.
He's world building, and he's using this, and this sounds like a criticism, and I don't mean it as a criticism, is that he's using this sort of thin story as a delivery mechanism to give you his elven language and dwarven language and orc language that he developed.
But it's
in the history, the world, the story from the history that happened 1,000 years ago to the history that happened 20 years ago to this is what the people are wearing and this is what they're talking about. Here's the songs they sing. Here's this hill that's tilted at a 45-degree angle that has brambles growing across it and stuff. I'm reading Lord of the Rings now, and I'm on the middle book, The Two Towers. I'm almost done with it. And, man, I'm at this point now where I really don't give a crap about Sam and Frodo. I absolutely love Aragorn and Legolas and Gimli and the Ents and all that sort of fighting and the story and the action and the adventure. And maybe this is kind of what we're talking about here, where it's just like, I really love that they're buckling their swashes and they're interesting characters and they're going forth and they're really doing anything. And what is the story of Sam and Frodo up to the point that I'm reading? I know there's more, and it probably, I hope it gets better, at least for me.
It does.
Of, all right, day 45, cold, wet, hungry. Next day, oh, brambles, cold, wet, and bleeding. And you know, it just kind of goes like that. And they cut all that out of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, which is fine for me because I hated that part. I really hate this part. It's a struggle for me to get through
exactly.
this middle book.
And once again, this is why I think it proves Asimov's point.
Yes.
Because you, Chad, are not, I would not describe you as a fan of fantasy.
No, I'm not.
In order to make a movie exciting to you, they had to mix it with other genres or change its substance, which is exactly what the
romance
precisely.
Action, yeah.
To our other question, is science fiction truly a genre or is it simply a setting for other kinds of stories? I don't have an answer because I feel torn, and here's why. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, it is absolutely true that the pure type, the ABC of science fiction, does not generally get translated to the screen. Speculative question, lots of detailed, super strong science doesn't get translated to the screen. So in that regard, I could say, yes, it is its own genre. It's not well represented in movies, but
would it make for a boring movie?
Well, that's not even the question here. But on the flip side, if I said, I'm going to give you a really strong drama or a really strong war story that also happens to have that speculation and science, does it now suddenly cease to become sci-fi? And I don't know I'm willing to take that leap because you know what? I mean, why do you suddenly sell out a genre because you dared to put in plot and character?
Right.
And so for that reason alone, even within my own complete internal wankery here, I am left at an impasse. I don't have a strong answer.
Yeah. I think I've seen a couple that either there wasn't really much in the way of action in the movie, or there was action in the movie and that isn't the point. That's not why you showed up. And that's certainly not why you liked the movie. The two that just absolutely spring to the forefront of my mind that are still science fiction, Gattaca and Children of Men. Now, Children of Men did have a lot of action in it, and, you know, it had guns and shooting and people died.
Well, it also had some horror. I mean, I guess it had a horror, but thriller elements, too.
It had the, God, will society end up like this? Holy crap sort of elements. But, man, it had a really good story, too.
It did have a good story, but, and I guess you could qualify Children of Men as science fiction, but
I would totally qualify it as science fiction.
Yeah, I guess so. I agree with you, though. It was a fantastic movie. Was, in a certain way, kind of, I don't even want to get into that issue, but it made you examine certain societal
even 1984
behaviors,
which I consider a science fiction. 1984, the movie, even had a bit of action in it too.
I want to use all of this as a springboard for a gaming debate that I have actually been having.
I vehemently disagree.
You actually probably will. Well, maybe. There's an
And then I will agree just to prove you wrong.
Okay. There's an internal debate I've been having for a while, and I have been using Chad as my devil's advocate on this.
Really?
Yes, because it's just a personal quirk of mine that I'll have an internal debate, and I will find somebody who has a strong opinion one way or the other, and sometimes I'll take the other side just because it helps me develop the thoughts to springboard this off of them. And there has been something in gaming I have been wanting to do, but just as we're talking about science fiction and maybe fantasy, different debate for a different time, doesn't really well translate to a mass audience. This is something that I'm not so sure would translate well to a role-playing game, particularly if we're not talking about Lone Wolf, and that's a superhero game. And here is why.
I will tell you why you don't think that, but give me your reason.
Here are the two sides of the debate. The one side is, like most geeks, I love superhero stories. Mm-hmm. And in the great diversity of types of superhero stories, from the very gritty and realistic all the way up
like
to the
deconstruction of the superhero.
Yeah, the deconstruction, the stuff like The Boys.
Right.
If you're familiar with that.
Oh, my God, I love The Boys. The fantastic
imprints,
comic book.
The DC imprints, I think is what they're called, you know, that kind of stuff. Sure. All the way up to the shining guy in tights.
Yeah. The Superman where there's no lighting on Superman, but he's internally lit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, certainly in those things, I can find stories I like. And being a role player, one of the first things I think is, gee, wouldn't it be awesome to translate this into a role-playing game, create a fun story, and watch my players, or if I am a player, have some fun toying around with this idea. But here's the part where I'm not sure it would translate. Just as I'm not sure...
You do not have a big enough package to show off in spandex. That's what your major block is, isn't it?
According to a website that gives hair to little girls, I'm about 4 inches too short.
That's right.
And when you're... Never mind. It's about to go somewhere that's not even funny. But my...
I think it's hilarious, but
here's the point. When I look, just as when we look at sci-fi, we say the essence of the story is the speculation, the science, and the speculation may be interesting to people, the science generally is not. When I look at a superhero game, what I see is fundamentally a story that's about one of two things. One is the extreme internal development of an individual, okay? Maybe even a group of individuals, but when you write a story like a graphic novel, you can write from a third-person omniscient view and spend huge amounts of time on their internal struggle and dialogues. Mm-hmm. You can spend huge amounts of time on what happens when they go home to the wife and no other characters there. You can't do that at a table for people.
Yeah.
For reasons we've taken apart many times on this show.
And since we said it, it's absolutely true.
Or you tell a story about an individual who has effectively such unparalleled power that what makes them unique and amazing to society is the peculiarity of that power. And if you're suddenly in a group of people who all share that, mm-hmm. and there are sufficient threats in the world to cause you alarm, not just for one sitting or short campaign, but for an ongoing game, suddenly that peculiarity is gone. It may not be everybody's like you, but there are enough people like you that you're only a superhero in level of power. You're not a superhero in terms of your rarity.
Right.
And as a result, it seems like that for a group of four people...
Are you saying like the true superhero is not Superman, but the true superhero is the normal firefighter who is brave enough to go up into the Tower 2 or whatever?
If you have
September 11th,
a group of people that are all Superman,
yeah,
and there's a sufficient cast of villains to cause them threat on a regular basis, then suddenly there's nothing, at least within this group, that makes you feel special. Or you deal with people that are more normal, who are the regular guy doing extraordinary things, but mm-hmm. you can't develop the internal dialogue and backstory because you can't leave the spotlight on one person long enough to do it.
Dan,
I want these games to work. Help me get past this.
Here's where I am going to point something out to you.
Okay.
All right. I vehemently disagree with you. And
well, I haven't come to a conclusion.
Right.
So you,
and here's the flaw I see in your reasoning.
My negative reasoning.
Your negative. Actually, it's not a flaw I see in your negative reasoning. It's a flaw that I see, I'm sorry to say, in you.
Uh-oh.
And this is something that maybe I've just been around you too much. I didn't quite notice. But actually, some people in the forums have pointed this out. Some people in blog posts have pointed this out about you.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably haven't seen it yet. And I have come to totally agree with them. When we start doing debates on can you play, like in the last episode, can you play an anthro or can you play an animal, and you say things like, and of course I can't quote you because I can't even remember what we had for dinner, but you say things such as, I really can't get into it, we're playing in a wolf pack, and I don't really see, you know, how you can do an extended camp. You can do a one or two shot in a wolf pack, but you don't see how you can carried on.
Right.
Or a superhero game.
Right.
You know, like all the arguments you just put out.
Okay.
And you're like, I don't see how you can extend that because it's not important and stuff. Or and some other third thing. It's like, you know, it's like, I see that, but I don't really see how you can keep it going. Or maybe I can see it from this angle. But I'm sorry to say, but I have to agree with them. You're not being imaginative enough. You are not following the thought out enough. You are not saying enough what ifs. You are holding on to certain prejudices within your mind. Obviously not racial, oh my God, I hate black people prejudices, but you're holding on to certain, like what the word means, certain prejudices,
right,
in your mind of saying a wolf pack.
Can,
well,
I spin this to you a different way?
No, you cannot.
No, here's the thing. I think you're right on the symptom, wrong on the cause.
Okay. Well, I don't even know what the cause is.
All right.
I don't even remember what I said, right, actually. So.
Here's the thing. I don't think the issue is lack of imagination. I think I'm overly imaginative. Here's the issue.
Oh, are you, huh?
No. Here's the issue.
Yeah.
I had a very...
Do you know how egotistical you just sounded when you said that?
This will sound less egotistical as I go on.
Okay.
I had a conversation with Johnny G., sitting on
the imminent Johnny G.
Imminent and ever absent Johnny G.
Yes.
Though over the summer, we're hoping to have him on here
indeed
a lot more.
Hey, law school's a bitch, man. And that cocaine, it's a hell of a drug.
But I was having a conversation with Johnny G, and he gave me a quote that he thought was one of the recurring problems of my life.
Yeah.
And he is dead right. He did not know who it was by. I looked up, it's actually by Voltaire. And the
you
quote,
got 99 problems, but a paint one. That is Voltaire, by the way.
That was Voltaire. Yes, that was. Everyone thinks it's...
I thought that was Nietzsche.
No. Jay-Z. Everyone thinks it's Nietzsche, but no, it's
Nietzsche
Voltaire.
Nietzsche or Jay-Z, but it was actually... The quote is this. The perfect is the enemy of the good.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this was originally in French. But the way it translates to English is the perfect is the enemy of the good. That what I do is I take something and I want to squeeze so much out of it. I want to make it last. I want to make it perfect. That what I do is I...
But that's impossible.
It is impossible. And so the end result is I paralyze myself with considerations to the point I never do anything.
Right.
You want to know the reason why there have been so...
That's like the opposite side of the coin of what Dawn does when it comes to role-playing games. So we've talked about this before, where when she was trying to run a role-playing game where she's saying it's got to be these things and the bar is set reasonably high. But then she's like, oh, well, I can't do this, and oh, I can't do this, and oh, I can't do that. Not that that's your problem, but your problem is the same with hers, where it's self-defeating before you even
right
get there.
Exactly. And for example, the longest ongoing creative project I have had is an attempt to put out some Danvers fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Why has it never happened? Well, because what if I start the story here versus here? How far back in history should I go? Well, flashbacks kind of suck, but this history is a little boring. The perfect becomes the enemy of the good.
Right.
That the end result is I do nothing. And
I read this in a book that Stephen King wrote, and it's called Stephen King on Writing, which is an absolutely fantastic... I'm not a writer, but I thought it was a fantastic book. If you do anything creative, even if it's not writing, you should read this book because it's about the creative process. But he was talking about writing, and he's like, he talks about that. He
right
talks about, you know, either the self-defeatism, I'll never be good enough, I'll never be this or that, or why am I even bothering? Or, you know, it's got to be perfect, it's got to be this, it's got to be this. Shut up and write. Writing is not about the art. And that's a real hard concept for people to get behind. Writing is not about art. It's a job where you wake up in the morning, you do your daily routine, you take a shower, you shower and shave, and then you sit down, and for X number of hours, you write. And then when those hours are done, you stop writing. No matter if you're on a roll, it
right
doesn't matter. You stop writing.
Now,
and then the next day, you do the same thing.
We have tangented wildly, and I think it was a good tangent. Because you know what? I think there's probably people listening that do this to themselves, whether it's with writing or role-playing games. They probably go through the same thing I do.
Done.
The perfect becomes...
I'm not what I would describe as a creator. I do not, even though I don't pronounce creator, but I don't create things. I am a consumer of...
Consumer.
I'm a consumer.
Yeah,
consumer.
Consumer of media. I'm kind of set up to be a critic of media, to look at media and say, oh, it's good and what's bad. Not judgment, but say, whatever. People are going to say I hate everything when I say that, but whatever.
That's because you do.
I do, whatever, hate everything, yeah, right. I consume media, and I consume it on so many different levels, and I see so many creative people that surround me. Creative people like you, Dan, and my wife, Dawn, and a whole lot of people who are so creative, yet they never produce. And they never produce because they think too much. They don't sit there and do. They sit there and think, oh, what is this? Oh, if I can do, oh, I'm not good enough. Oh, well,
and let's maybe go back to the GM jitters.
Yeah.
This may be you we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this
creativity does not have to do with painting a fresco on the roof of the Sistine Chapel. Creating could be anything from writing a novel and trying to publish it and doing something on the Sistine Chapel all the way down to you're trying to put together that one shot for your weekend game that's in between games.
The creativity comes out of the job. Yeah. When you sit down and do it, it's when, and this is true, you know, even in regular work, as you're doing your work, you make that effort to get it just right, to get that thing just perfectly, either perfectly written or get that presentation perfectly put together. The creativity comes when you apply yourself and do the job. And yeah, you could sit there and second guess yourself, but you have to get past that step and do it. I've been struggling with this story. Actually, some BattleTech fiction that I've been dying to submit. I've had the story in my head for a couple of years.
Ugh, get it finally out. Started, get finally, it out on
well,
paper.
Well, see, here's the problem. I was putting it down on virtual paper. I'm keying it out, and I'm just continuing to struggle and continuing to struggle and continuing to struggle. And the problem was what I was seeing in my head was what I wanted, but I couldn't translate it in the way in which I was writing it. And so I essentially had to scrap the entire thing that I was working on and completely changed the angle with which I was coming at it from the same story. And now suddenly, it's like flowing like crazy. I've already made up all the words I trashed, you know, going into this, into it.
I want to do something that we have never done, to the best of my recollection.
Record without pants on?
And no.
Oh, I'm already out
we've
that.
Done.
Oh, well.
That's been there, done that. Got the Chris. But I want to do something that I don't think we've ever done, the best of my recollection, the history of Fear the Boot. We are going to have a two-part episode.
Really?
Because what we have done in this episode is we have done some things that I think some people are going to see as compelling debate. Some people, and if they really understood this episode, I think are going to be able to personalize what we talked about and extrapolate some kind of abstract ideas to help them. And some people are just going to say, this was wankery, where was the gaming?
Yeah.
But what I wanted, and that's fine.
I hate to tell you this.
No, the gaming is in there. It's just hidden.
Well, I hate to tell you this, but this is Fear the Boot.
Well,
this is all wankery.
Well, here's the thing. All of the gaming discussion is. But here's what I want to do.
We're not curing cancer here.
What I want to do is have a part two to this episode where we are going to pick this discussion up and we're going to move away from the concept to the application. And we are going to have a little workshop with me as its focus next episode.
It's all about you, isn't it?
Where you guys are going to help me figure out how to make a superhero game really work for a group of people. And I'm not talking about system. It's a system.
And it's not about...
It's about telling the story.
Yeah. It's not about a superhero. Dan can't do superheroes. It's not about that. It's not about
that. But I want to come back talk about superhero games. And if... I've got a note here because I think they're very similar.
Mm-hmm.
If we get the superhero thing done in the early part of the episode, then we can move on to what we lovingly call god level games or epic level games,
which you don't think are very good.
I think have similar problems superhero games, and I want you guys to help me settle this internal debate.
It's the same. All right.
If you guys got anything you want to get in, hop on the forum. Get in the discussion, send a PM to Chad or Chris, give them some ammunition to use, and we come back next time, we are going to pick up with an extended, detailed debate on superhero games, possibly followed up by epic level games. And until then, you guys stay frosty. Be sure to check out the show notes for all the stuff on Neverwinter Nights. More importantly, Raina's Wings and all that. And we will catch you next time.
See ya.
Later.
Later days.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.